Welcome back. This is part three of our series on low-energy nuclear reactions. Last time, we weighed the controversial heat and ash evidence.
Right, and the big question was why those results were so notoriously hard to replicate. To answer that, we have to look at the palladium lattice itself.
Exactly. Picture a metal that drinks deuterium like a sponge. We need to look at how you load that lattice, and why a single number, 0.875, became the ultimate battleground of the debate.
So before we even touch the contested nuclear claims, how do you force that much gas into a solid piece of metal?
Because before you can even think about nuclear reactions, you have a massive metallurgy hurdle. Let's look at a dense block of palladium. It has these tiny octahedral gaps in its crystal lattice, exactly one per palladium atom. We are trying to stuff a deuterium atom into every single one of those gaps.
Okay, here's the thing. When you jam that deuterium in, the metal actually swells by about 10% in volume, transitioning into what's called the concentrated beta phase. But getting it there is a real materials problem. Normally, you'd need a ridiculous amount of gas pressure.
It's basically a pressure amplifier game. Instead of gas cylinders, researchers use an electrolytic cell. By applying just a small voltage overpotential, the electrochemistry at the surface mimics extreme pressure.
Wait, so how extreme are we talking? Give me the scale.
Well, the ideal thermodynamic limit is a mind-boggling 10 to the 34th atmospheres per volt. In reality, surface reactions bleed most of that off, but you still get the equivalent of thousands of atmospheres. You quietly achieve a deuterium density inside the metal that is comparable to liquid deuterium itself, but at room temperature.
Right. And the strange part is, this very success is self-limiting. The stress of that 10% swelling creates microcracks. Once it cracks, the deuterium leaks right out. It's a constant, delicate tug of war.
Imagine trying to weigh a sponge while it's submerged and being blasted with a fire hose. That's essentially the problem with measuring the deuterium loading ratio, X, in real time. Since we can't just throw the cathode on a scale during electrolysis, the field relies on a clever electrical proxy, the resistance ratio method, or R over R0.
Wait, so you're measuring the electrical resistance of the palladium itself to see how stuffed it is?
It's basically an obstacle course. As deuterium crawls into the lattice, it scatters the conduction electrons, which makes the resistance climb. But here's the catch. The curve is treacherously two-valued.
Two-valued? Meaning the same resistance reading could point to two completely different loading levels?
Exactly. The graph essentially forms a steep hill. As the metal loads, the resistance ratio climbs to a peak of about 2.0 when X hits 0.75. But as you pack in even more deuterium, the lattice starts to order itself again, and the resistance actually drops. So a reading of 1.7 is highly ambiguous. It could mean you have a mediocre loading of 0.5 or an excellent near-threshold loading of 0.93.
Right. And the scary part is that if your cathode cracks or the temperature drifts, you could easily think you're on the high-performance branch when you're actually sitting back on the low end. It is basically a blind flight. To know which side of the peak you are on, you have to track the entire history of the run, watching the resistance rise, crest, and descend. It's an incredibly delicate inference, and a big reason why these loading claims are so heavily disputed.
Which brings us to the threshold. Because if measuring the loading is that difficult, staking a claim on a specific threshold number is incredibly high stakes. It is the ultimate materials science gatekeeper. Michael Macoubra's group at SRI made this big empirical claim. You do not get any excess heat at all unless the ratio of deuterium to palladium atoms, the loading ratio, crosses that 0.875 threshold.
Wait, so if you believe that claim, it explains why the 1989 replications failed. They mostly reached a mediocre 0.7. But if you are a skeptic, it sounds like an unfalsifiable escape hatch.
So is reaching 0.875 actually a massive physical hurdle, or is it just a convenient excuse?
Oh, it is a genuine materials nightmare. When you force that much deuterium into palladium, the crystal structure swells by 10% in volume. That massive phase transition creates intense physical stresses, multiplying defects and opening microcracks. It is basically a leaky tank. The harder you push, the more it leaks.
Which means the act of loading actively destroys your capacity to load. And that explains the Google-funded program from 2015 to 2019. They tried to systematically reach and hold that 0.875 benchmark. Out of dozens of attempts, they actually exceeded it only twice, and only transiently, using state-of-the-art tools.
Precisely. And they saw no excess heat in those runs. Now, proponents note they used protium, not deuterium, for their record loading of 0.96. But the Google team's real achievement was proving just how physically destructive this regime is, and showing that the field's traditional resistance proxy can seriously mislead us.
Okay, so we've got this packed palladium lattice, but how does that actually change the physics of the nuclei themselves? Doesn't the Coulomb barrier, that massive electrical repulsion, still say absolutely not to fusion? Normally, yes. But a runner facing a high wall might get a little spring in their step. That's what electron screening does. The negative charge of surrounding electrons cancels out some of that positive nuclear repulsion. It acts as a tiny, constant energy subsidy.
Wait, so the electrons are paying a portion of the energy toll? How much of a discount are we actually talking about here?
In a simple, clean environment, like a gas target of deuterium molecules, it's a very modest discount. The absolute maximum we'd expect from bound electrons is what's called the adiabatic limit, about 27 or 28 electron volts. It's the limit of atomic physics. So, did the experiments actually match that calculation?
They did. In the 90s, researchers fired deuterons into deuterium gas and measured a screening energy of 25 electron volts, plus or minus 5. It was a beautiful confirmation. The method worked, the math held up, and everyone agreed on the number.
Okay, so 25 electron volts is the honest, undisputed benchmark. It proves the environment can help the nuclei tunnel.
It does. The lattice is not just a spectator. But as we're about to see, when you swap that gas for a metal lattice, that polite 25 EV discount suddenly balloons into a massive theoretical scandal.
Okay, now we get to the part of the story where mainstream, peer-reviewed nuclear physics runs headfirst into a massive, unexplained surprise. This isn't some fringe claim. We're talking about papers published in top-tier physics journals by at least 4 independent accelerator groups worldwide.
A mainstream nuclear puzzle? I'm intrigued. What did they actually find inside the metal?
Starting in 2001, groups in Berlin, Japan, and Germany fired low-energy deuteron beams into deuterated metals. And when they measured the fusion rates, they got yields that were way too high. The metal's electrons were somehow canceling out some of the nuclear repulsion. It's a process called electron screening, and it basically acts like a discount on the energy barrier.
Okay, so the electrons are shielding the positive nuclei from each other. But why is that a scandal?
Because of the size of the discount, they measured screening energies between 300 and 800 electron volts. To put that in perspective, the standard atomic limit is only about 28 EV. If you throw in every solid state effect known to science, calculations max out around 100 to 300 EV at the absolute most. These experimental results are up to 8 times larger than any published theory.
Wait, so the calculations are off by up to a factor of 8? Do the different groups actually agree on the exact number?
Not quite. For palladium, the Tohoku group measured 310 EV, but the Bochum group got 800. They disagree by a factor of 2 or 3 because of messy variables like carbon buildup or surface sputtering. But here is the thing. Every single group agrees there is an anomalous enhancement. mainstream physics has carried this open mystery on its books for 25 years.
Okay, but Hope, we have to look at the math here. If we have this massive 800 electron volt screening discount in palladium, doesn't that solve the whole problem? If we slide that down to room temperature, shouldn't the barrier just melt away?
It sounds like it would. At room temperature, the bare gamma factor is so high that the tunneling probability is basically 10 to the minus 2700. But if we plug in that anomalous 800 EV discount, the math is striking. At zero energy, the collision basically happens at the screening energy, and the gamma exponent drops from over 6,000 down to just 35.
35? Wow! That means the tunneling probability is, what, 10 to the minus 16? That is a massive jump.
It is. It closes almost the entire exponent. But here is where we need some adult supervision. A penetration probability is still not a rate. If 10 to the minus 16 were the rate per assault, and atoms vibrate 10 to the 14 times a second, your kitchen table would be actively fusing.
Okay, so what is the actual rate? Why doesn't the math match reality?
Because that beam-derived discount describes a fast, dynamic projectile. Two thermal deuterons parked in a lattice are static, governed by molecular-type physics. Leggett-Bain bounds cap that static screening rate at 10 to the minus 45 fusions per pair per second. But to get just 1 watt of heat out of a cubic centimeter of palladium, you need 10 to the minus 11. We are still 53 orders of magnitude short. So even with the most generous, anomalous discount possible, it's still like trying to leap across the Grand Canyon and landing 30 orders of magnitude short.
Exactly. A surprising discount on the barrier simply isn't a hole in the wall.
This is where the real knife fight of modern screening research is happening, down on the sub-KeV frontier. We are talking about firing deuterons at energies so incredibly low that the beam itself barely functions. Carbon builds up on the target, and the signal is tiny. But this is exactly where the screening enhancement should be at its absolute maximum.
It sounds like an experimentalist's nightmare, but Konrad Chersky's group in Szczecin recently pushed through those challenges. They measured D plus D yields in zirconium deuteride all the way down to a center of mass energy of just 675 electron volts. That is practically scraping the screening energy itself. What did they actually see down there?
Something extraordinary. In a 2025 Physical Review X paper, they reported signatures of a completely new reaction channel. They are proposing a 0+ threshold resonance in helium-4 that sits right at the D+D threshold and decays by internal electron-positron pair emission. If this is real, the most studied fusion reaction in physics has had a secret door for 80 years.
We have to emphasize that if. It is a top-tier journal, but it is still a single-group claim awaiting replication. Yet it perfectly captures the shift in how physicists view the lattice now. It is not this magical, passive spectator, nor is it a cold fusion machine. It is an active quantum environment.
It's active, but not magical. The solid-state physics cannot rescue room-temperature cold fusion. Even with an 800 electron-volt screening discount, the math is still 30 orders of magnitude short of a watt of heat. But instead of asking the lattice to fuse cold deuterons, what if we inject hot ones? What if we use that massive screening discount on purpose? That is the pivot.
So where does that leave us? On one hand, the lattice is clearly doing something real. The electron screening we see in beam experiments proves the metal isn't just standing by. But on the other, even the most generous screening values still leave us dozens of orders of magnitude short of actual room temperature cold fusion.
Yeah, it's a fascinating discount on the Coulomb barrier, but it doesn't tear the wall down. Which raises the obvious question, what if we stop trying to do this at room temperature and actually inject energetic, hot deuterons into the mix? Next time, in our final episode, will follow that exact thread to NASA's doorstep and face the field's ultimate error bar reckoning. The final piece of the puzzle. We will see you there.